One of the mistakes that we often make, or what we want to avoid, let's put it that way, is that we cannot raise cyber awareness from the position of Moses. Thou shalt not this, thou shalt not that. We need to teach cyber awareness in a way that people still can enjoy the benefits of e-services. That should be the standing point.
Welcome to this podcast created by the e-Estonia Briefing Center. In this series, we invite some of the most influential people in politics and business to discuss all angles of digitalization in Estonia and the world. From past learnings to current challenges and future plans. So take a seat, pour yourself a glass of your favorite drink, and enjoy the art of digitalization. Well, hello and welcome to another episode of The Art of Digitalization. My name is Florian Marcus, and today with me is Lauri Eilmann, who is the co-founder of Cybexer Technologies. Thank you so much for being here. How are you today?
I'm fine, and good to see you, Florian.
It's always nice to see people in person again, so it's it's absolutely wonderful. I guess we can jump right into it.
Absolutely.
What does Cybexer do?
We build cyber capabilities, and in particular, we build cyber ranges, and which are basically platforms where companies, governments, individuals can engage in very immersive cyber trainings.
So it's all about teaching cybersecurity skills, I guess, both on a technological level, but also on a decision maker level.
Sure.
I understand that you offer different products for different levels, let's say.
We do. Our training offerings span from regular users who can benefit from our cyber hygiene or cyber awareness. We have 250,000 users on that platform. Among others, the whole Estonian government who is using our platform, and we have some interesting challenges there to work with. On top of that, at the top of the pyramid, we have strategic or management decision-making exercises, because cybersecurity, it's not only technology, it involves decision-making, and we just try to sketch the mind maps of senior leaders as they go about deciding stuff at cyber events. And then but at the core of our offering and the main body of what we do at Cybexer Technologies is definitely cyber ranges and deep technical cyber trainings.
So cyber range, just for our audience perhaps, is a virtual environment where you sort of you can launch automated attacks against a certain team that is testing their capabilities. What else is possible?
It is a training platform. In essence, it combines hardware and software. We own and manufacture or create, I think it's a better word to say, the software platform that runs these ranges. So you have what is called automation layer, which means that we need to be able to automatically create the environments where exercises take place. That's hard to do, but our team has years and years of experience in creating some of the largest exercises in the world, so we have solved that problem. Then you need visualization, which means you basically need to tell the story of what is happening there. Then you need a library, which is the targets that we want to put together and build environments off. They are sort of Lego blocks. And then on top of the on top of that, the personal profile of each and every user of CyberRange. So and there are other features as well. But yes, basically this is a platform to conduct trainings. Mm-hmm. This is a platform to conduct testing, employee testing, for example. This is also a platform to do what is called pre-production training. For example, we just had this Microsoft Exchange event a couple of months ago. Massive vulnerabilities discovered all across the world.
Yeah.
They were coupled by automated attacks. Mm-hmm. So what you need to do to mitigate those attacks is sometimes you just want to patch them up, right? But you want to see if those patches work. A great way to see how those patches work is in a simulated environment on CyberRange rather than in live productions. So if you run a critical service or if you run a business, then you want to know if your improvement works before. So it's not only about training, but it's also testing. And we have also connected into the CyberRange complex solutions, starting from SCADA modules that run, for example, heat and ventilation system. Mm-hmm. Why is that necessary? Well, hackers can, for example, hack into a data center and cause the heat and ventilation system of data center think that 100 degrees Celsius is perfectly normal. So they manipulate it in a way which leads to an explosion. Mm-hmm. Because they overheat. This is one of the scenario, for example, that we can play through. We have done drones together with Estonian company Triod. We have done ground satellite station under European Space Agency grant together with Spaceit, mm-hmm. an Estonian company. So there's a lot of operational technology related collaboration as well, and CyberRange is a great way to test those things. Look, 1 month ago there was an attack against US meat production, mm-hmm. industry.
Yeah.
So what you now need is very fast replicatable environments on meat production, mm-hmm. because this is a target now, and there are companies who need that. How strange it might sound, but that's the reality we live in.
Yeah, absolutely. I also went through the cyber hygiene test before I started my job at the briefing center. So very funny you mentioned that at the start. Where did that idea come from to go in that direction? You're the co-founder of Cybexer. Why did you think that this was the what the world needed? Did you see a niche, or was that founded in your own experience?
In cyber cyber awareness?
Yes. Overall cyber, overall cyber what training. It does. Yes.
It of course is rooted in all of our experiences, because we feel passionate about cyber for different reasons. We have, I think, one of the most talented groups of cyber experts in this region. We have approximately 40-50 of us, depending how we count, and then they all have their own story and background. Mine, of course, is in Estonian government. My first cyber involvement was in, if I remember correctly, 1999, when we had a first panel on cybersecurity. Actually,
wow.
That took place when we organized a conference on NATO legal matters, of all things, when we needed to prepare our accession to NATO. At least it was in a very, very early stage, but for some reason I can't remember how cybersecurity came up. But then of course it mushroomed into different topics, and 2004 Estonia decided to set up a NATO CCD COE. It's not good branding, I must say, but if we just say it out, I think it's cooperative Cybersecurity Center of Excellence.
Yes.
In Estonian, it sounds much better. It's 5K, and that's the origin. And I think it's also fitting to remember here General Kert, who passed away some months ago, who was the author of the idea.
Yeah.
And when the sad news came, I actually went through my old notebook of General's briefing, And it took place in August 2004. That was the first time when the decision to set up the center was on the table, and the general was briefing everybody in the room. And in his briefings were two remarkable sentences. One of them was, "I have made rounds with all NATO embassies, and none of them see cyber as part of NATO toolbox."
Yeah.
That was 2004. And another sentence was, "It's 99% that NATO is not going to fund it. So we need to take a decision to fund it nationally." And we did it. So we, because, and the thing is, this is the two coins. This is the e-Estonia looking at services, and this is e-Estonia looking at security. And I think this is what we have always been doing. We cannot have these benefits without thinking about security. And we realized that pretty early on in 2004, but the world just wasn't there. Can you imagine this sentence right now? We don't see cyber as part of our toolbox.
You will not get funding from any international organization.
Exactly. and that's, and this is, this has all happened in such a short time frame. And of course, then 2007 happened, which was to a large extent a very successful messaging exercise on part of Estonian government as a whole, and that resulted us in different pathways for everybody involved in those. I mean, if you look at some of the talent that was involved in responding to these attacks,
they're still here,
hidden and in front lines, they are still here. President Ilves, of course, has always been in the front rows of or front lines actually of this, but there are many more. Heli Dirma, who wrote the very first Estonian cybersecurity strategy draft concept paper. Christian Liflander, who is now running cyber in NATO. Lukas Kello, who was part of our messaging team, who is now in Oxford. I think I don't want to make a mistake of confusing Oxford and Cambridge, but I think he's in Oxford. And then, it was a great team.
Yeah,
and of course I'm leaving many people out now.
We just went through a sort of a time period of 6-7 years, some of the most momentous years, I guess, of Estonian history. In 2004, not only did the CCD-COE slowly take shape, but also Estonia did join NATO. Estonia did join the EU as well. To add some more complexity, and you mentioned 2007. So that was, of course, the year that cyber attack took place against several institutions around Estonia and organizations, both from the private and public sector. Could you tell us more about what your role was back then and how you experienced it?
Well, at that time, I was the permanent secretary of Ministry of Defense. Sometimes it's also translated secretary general, or in Estonia it's called Kanzler. And I know in German it's completely different.
Congratulations.
Yes. Completely different kind of upgrade. But permanent means 5 years. So I was the most senior civil servant. And as the most senior civil servant, you are automatically a member of what is called the Estonian Government Crisis Committee. You represent your ministry, and when something bad happens, starting from, I don't know, plane crashes, critical hostage situations, even snowstorms, crisis committee convenes and deals with the situation. So we have the system, and of course I was representing Estonian MOD in the crisis committee when 2007 happened. But on top of that, it happened in a political context, which was removal of the war memorial from Tõnismäe to the war cemetery, and that fell directly into the hands of Ministry of Defense. So MOD was in charge of that event, and ultimately I was the one who actually physically signed the contract with all the contractors who actually did the physical
removal.
So it was an interesting moment. There are, I think 2007 sort of has exhausted itself in a discussions, but then it pops up again. I wrote one speech that we delivered. And that was one of the first speeches by Estonian government official after the attacks. Mm. And it happened in May, interestingly, in Irish University, University of Limerick. And Christian Liflander and Lukas Kello wrote the speech, and I was, you know, just participating there, but I would credit them. But as we wrote it, we also were thinking about what are the messages that we want to send, and then how do we communicate to the outside world. And interestingly, this Limerick speech, as we call it, and sometimes I call it Christian, or when we talk, I said it lives on, because again and again we get invited to talk what happened. And most recently, interestingly, in Ireland, whose health service suffered terrible ransomware attack.
Yeah.
And one of the issues why people want to talk about it was how did you communicate? How come after 2007, Estonia's e-services tripled, quadrupled, basically, you know, grew exponentially? How people did not lose trust?
Mm.
Because it was 2007, e-services were not that popular. E-government wasn't that popular. It was the transparency, I think, that won people over. It was... there are some very clear moments, and I think if we remember some, one very, very important moment to me emerged. We actually had a discussion if we are going to publish or not. How do we communicate about it?
And what you're going to publish? Yeah.
And there were voices in the very high in the government who said words, and I'm not going to attribute them, but I'm just using the quote, which is one person said, "This is embarrassment to the government." Another said that we lack intellectual capacity to communicate to international media. But of course, President Ilves, Minister of Foreign Affairs Paet, Minister of Justice Lang, Prime Minister Ansip, they all drove this communication process, and of course were extremely efficient, and the civil service also supported it. So I think this transparency also gave us confidence of people on which we can build these services. And if you remember ID card crisis when
2017
happened, 10 years ago, or 10 years after, exactly 10 years after, then the government took exact same approach under Prime Minister Ratas. We published everything, and we do not ignore problems. And that's exactly the problem that Irish were facing. Because after this devastating, not devastating, but very, very nasty kind of attack against health system, which is much more sensitive, of course, than what we experienced in 2007, there started to grow voices that, should we proceed with this e-government thing?
Yeah.
Maybe we are too fast. And this e-service skepticism, I think, can be cured by transparency. When we have a problem, we talk about it.
What struck me about you drew the line between 2007 and 2017 with the EID card questions. What struck me was that there seems to be a sort of unwritten social contract in Estonia, regardless of whatever party's in power, that you talk openly about this kind of stuff. Where does that come from?
I have four pictures. I don't know if it's helpful, but when I explain Estonian e-services and Estonian cybersecurity mentality to people then from abroad, then I ask them to take four pictures with them, especially if it's helpful if they visit Estonia.
Mm-hmm.
Number one is Old Town. Look at the Old Town. Old Town is beautiful. Everybody knows that example a little bit. Why is Old Town beautiful? Because we were poor. In 1800s, end of 1800s, Riga was the center. Riga had the money to tear down the old buildings and build a new Jugend and Art Nouveau style buildings, which are beautiful, but of course, a large part of the classic Old Town.
Not a real old town.
It's not
like
old. Yeah. Exactly. but we have it, but we don't have it. It's not by design or by decision. It was because we are poor, and that's the reason why we did the e-government.
Yeah.
In Ireland, I had the question that, you know, where did you took the decision to put resources into developing e-government? And I said, no, you get it completely wrong. It's not the decision to spend, it's decision to save.
Yeah.
The second picture that I always have is when Estonian person, and I think it's and I know, I think you went to summer house shopping, but when Estonians go and buy a summer cottage, then we have one criteria, which is we prefer not to see the windows of our neighbor. So you have this very specific design of Estonian village, which is almost unique in Europe, where villages are close together, Estonians are wide apart.
Yeah.
The respect for privacy. This is also there. And then the third example are the bus lanes. If you look at the bus lanes in Tallinn, you see people respect that. Bus lanes occurred by the order of the mayor in one day over the weekend. And what happened, people just went, oh, okay, and they respected it. Yeah. So Estonians like regulations and respect law by and large. I have had contracts, I don't know, in Georgia, in Ukraine, in Colombia, in Brussels, in Paris. If you look at bus lanes there, then in some cases you have little bricks separating them. In some cases you have a little fence. In some cases you have actually concrete walls, because otherwise people won't respect it. In Estonia, you do. So you have this law-abiding side of it. And finally, of course, the singing festival, which is, with taking all this, the old town, the private village, and the law-abidingness, we sometimes want to do crazy stuff, and I think the combination of these four, when suddenly people come together and do something completely unique, is the formula why we are successful also in e-government.
Yeah.
But it's also a reason why we cannot directly copy it to other countries.
Precisely. I would be very surprised if all of a sudden a quarter of the German population would gather and sing patriotic songs in stadiums. That would be very surprising to me.
No.
Besides maybe a World Cup final or something.
Exactly.
Yes. So going back a bit to the cybersecurity and education aspect, you put a lot of development in the area of cyber hygiene, sort of the capacity development. What do you think the shortcomings are around the world, and where can cybersecurity sort of play a role in this?
It is an exercise in patience. Cyber hygiene, cyber awareness, all kinds of cyber trainings, they are exercise in patience, and they are exercise in a sort of way also exercise in humility. I think one of the mistakes that we often make, or what we want to avoid, let's put it that way, is that we cannot raise cyber awareness from the position of Moses. Thou shall not this, thou shall not that. We need to teach cyber awareness in a way that people still can enjoy the benefits of e-services. That should be the standing point. And we want to explain to people that you need to change little things. You need to start noticing little things. And then if you pick it up slowly and slowly, it's like learning a language. Then you will start doing better. This is number one. Another thing is that I think we very much believe, of course, in the online platform and the way we set it up. And as you know, as you have gone through it as well, our cyber awareness training is designed so that also the organizers of the course learn from the users. So at every step of the way, we measure your reaction. Every step of the way, you can send us feedback. Now, this feedback is very important data for us to see maybe we are missing something. Maybe people are seeing something different. Maybe it is...
It's a different use case.
It's a different use case. Yeah. Or maybe people just ignore it. So for example, we have given people opportunities to vent out just their problems. So, for example, in one of the, I think, USB drive cases in one of the with one of the clients, we had feedback who said that, no, if we go to a trade show, of course we use all the USBs that are that are given to us, and we believe your security regulation is wrong. Now, this is an important piece of information. If you do a PowerPoint training on cyber awareness, and when you just say, don't use USB drives given to you in trade shows, and click next slide, you even don't know that people do not respect that rule.
Yeah.
But if you have that vent, then you learn more. So we need to learn also.
Yeah, with those presentations, people will just internally flip their middle finger at you.
Exactly.
And then wait for the next slide and continue.
Exactly. Yeah. But now at least we give that opportunity to them and analyze it. Similarly, for example, we have we give opportunities that, for example, I don't have a social media account. I have never used a USB. I have never used a cloud service. I don't have Wi-Fi at home. So if you answer all those no's, then we would like to know about you as well. Because
how can we contact you?
It's also that it's strange.
Yeah.
You know, then it's also a risky case.
Mm-hmm.
So lack of quality. We want people to have the quality of life, and if they report also in the awareness training that they lack that quality, then, or we had also in the previous engagement, I think we had somebody who said, "I change my password every day."
So this sure is just, you do.
Yeah, sure, yeah. Of course. That will be qualified as risky because the person is probably bluffing. So we want to know about you. So
And I think there's something that we can all learn from that. You know, there is. How often do you change your router password? The password that you get from the router, like that's delivered with it, looks so incredibly complicated. You think, oh, no one could ever possibly guess that password. And you're right, they couldn't guess it, but the password lists
are published.
They're somehow compromised usually. So
I had an argument. The biggest problems are telcos, because I had an actual argument with one of my service providers. So we had the new router installed, and the guy came and said that, you know, I'm not going to change the password. What do you think? Are you afraid that you're being hacked? I said, yes.
And if you say no, then I would like to know about you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So and also these are these false misconceptions. They are totally dangerous. Which is one of them is that I don't have any secrets. I have nothing to hide. Of course you have. And it's not that it has to be anything embarrassing. It's just something that someone bad may use against your friend. So sometimes you may think so, but you may even not know what your secret is that is useful to somebody, or I'm not important enough. Of course you are. And those similar examples.
It's both the beauty and the scary thing about data in general, that it can be incredibly useful, you know, if you put good minds to good use and create new services, but also even though you might not recognize that data set XYZ would compromise anyone, you know,
exactly.
One of the things that that I find very interesting about what you do is that you're also sharing your insights with the public, and that you're trying to engage the younger generation in skill development. Can you tell us more about some events planned this year?
This is very exciting. So we are in the cyber skills gap, which is well known. Everybody knows it. We don't have enough cyber workforce for current jobs, and also if we look at upcoming jobs that are being added constantly in the job market. So we have made a decision, or we have realized rather, that it is not enough to wait. Those people in universities in cyber classes or cyber courses to graduate, and our decision has been to take a whole new generation of pre-university students from high schools and start teaching them cybersecurity at advanced level. And we need to take that generation. So before they go to university, they are already experts because we just don't have any time. At university, they can already specialize in much more advanced stuff, but they can already start working as well. we have a couple of incredible stories with this. So we have started a program called Cyber Battle of Estonia. It is produced as a TV show. We actually use the same production team who produces Estonian Idol, which is Eesti Otsib Superstaari. So we have Kaupo Karelson is the producer of the hacking show Cyber Battle of Estonia. We have Karl-Erik Taukar, who is the master of ceremonies and host. And we have, we will have it running on Telia channel, Telia Inspira channel in this autumn. It will be a live event on 30th of October in Tartu City, who is our big and great sponsor. But we have so many other sponsors, all the other cities, companies. It's really a community of companies who are and government institutions who are interested in this development.
And you've got the pre-finals as well in other cities, yes?
Oh, yes. Yeah. There are four pre-finals. We also are going to launch a platform where people can study before. And we are also going to have boot camps. So as people go, they can go to ctftech.com and sign up, find Cyber Battle of Estonia. Bootcamps are going to be in Tallinn, Tartu, Pärnu, Narva and Paide, which should cover the whole Estonia. And then this will be followed by semi-finals, basically, and then a big final event in Tartu in University Sports Hall. And it will be exciting. We will produce it as a show. There will be a lot of fun happening. And I can't give the scenario away, unfortunately, but everybody, of course, you are very welcome there, and we already have some events planned, but everybody's welcome to follow it in Telia Inspira as well. Two stories. One of them are those kids who start at 12, hacking in their schools, doing all kinds of stuff, and they are these young geniuses. We want to capture them. This is very exciting, and we really have we did a pilot last year, so four of those guys we have already hired in our company, for example, because they are really in an incredible level. One of them started at 12, and he knows. Another one said, "I cannot quite start in June because I'm doing my Cisco certs."
At age what?
At age 18, 17. So this is fine, but you can join in July. The even more exciting is the story of people who haven't seen command line never in their life. But now, because we have produced it in this way, they think, oh, maybe cybersecurity is something for me. And they join. And now we have had people who came to the boot camp, opened the command line, and are now involved in cybersecurity. This is the thing that we want to produce and promote and find that additional talent. So this is how we also close this cyber skills gap.
It's such an interesting development because I mean Estonia is already quite far in terms of IT skill development, relatively speaking. I think in Estonia every 10th university student studies something related to IT, which is a good start.
Yes.
But of course the population size in Estonia limits the potential a tiny bit, and we already see these days and have seen for quite a number of years now that IT students at university, that they are being taken out of the courses left and right after they pass their first year from all the different startups and IT companies. So, you know, if we do it at 20, why not do it at 12?
Exactly.
It's the reasonable thing to do.
So we will be there first.
So really, really cool that you're investing quite a bit into that. And I suppose that it also keeps some people from, you know, instead of spraying graffiti on the wall, maybe you can maybe you can defend a company or be a white hat hacker or anything like that.
It's much cooler actually, and there are so many good opportunities in this field. But also, of course, we want to develop a platform on to support this, and we are also eyeing other countries where we can expand with this initiative, because this is a format, and so there will be several international guests also in Tartu, and And who knows where this goes.
And you've had some international competitions already.
We have, yes. We have, for young people, we have had international competitions in the Emirates. Mm-hmm. This is actually where the idea started to grow. So we organized Cyber Battle of the Emirates, which was pretty similar model. We have done that for 2 years. Of course, in COVID year, that was an online event. We did also exercise in Tartu, and then there have been some other international events, and of course some big ones are coming up.
So yeah, you've got the whole range from teenagers to prime ministers and NATO generals.
Yes.
One last question that perhaps we could end on. Where do you still see a lot of development to be done in Estonia as well? Whether it's in the area of cybersecurity or elsewhere in the digital sphere.
In the area of cybersecurity, I definitely see the need to address the issue of ransomware.
Mm-hmm.
This is grave. And I think if you are a company that runs any business in Estonia, you are a target. If you are a company running any business in anywhere in the world, you are a target. And you don't have to do anything wrong. That's what's so nasty about it. But you may be attacked by ransomware. I think that this is in security field one of the things that I'm genuinely worried about. I'm genuinely worried about large-scale ransomware attack. I want that to be in every crisis management plan of every single company and public institution in Estonia, and I would like that there be more cooperation, and I'd like there to be less false moralization and less false equivalencies, meaning that if we compare ransomware to hostage situation and say that payments are not an option because this is supporting the terrorists, that ends the discussion. But what we need to do is we need to look for out of the box opportunities, negotiation opportunities. Look what the pipeline, Columbus pipeline situation led us. A good cooperation between FBI and the organization led to actually recapturing the paid ransom. And this is the style that we need. Mikko Hyppönen of F-Secure has been talking about that as well in connection with attacks against Finnish medical sector, in particular the psychiatric hospital where the records were leaked. And he said also that if you make a payment, let me know and we'll try to trace it. We need to come to some sort of unusual out of the box solutions, but the problem currently what I see is the following. If a company gets hit, they are going to pay because it's a small money taking risk. If the government tells them that this is supporting the terrorism and completely immoral and full stop, then what happens is they don't share that information with government anymore, and government loses intelligence opportunities. Now, if government says, okay, if you feel the need to pay, we don't like it. However, let's do it together. Let's open a criminal file, and that gives us an authority to actually trace and follow and conduct some good intelligence. That will give us some database. That will be a basis for international cooperation, and that will finally lead us to something. It reminds me very much the attribution issue. In cybersecurity, there was another big white whale, which was attribution. Who is behind the attacks? Mm-hmm. It was never known. And in 2007, it was common knowledge to say, you know, technically it's so complex, we don't know who is behind it, although everybody knew. But now, for a couple of years now, we have official attribution mechanism, we have legislation, and we have capabilities. EU has attributed a number of cyber attacks. Mm-hmm. Germany has attributed a number of cyber attacks. And same should happen with ransomware as well. We just need to invest, we need to research, and if we just moralize over it, then that's not helpful. But we also need to plan for it.
The one thing that ransomware attackers benefit from is that organizations, both private and public sector, are very reluctant to share their weaknesses and their sort of past lessons learned. The more divided we are, the less of a chance we have at standing up to it.
And this needs urgent action.
Mm. Yeah. Very important words for the last part of our conversation. And I think if you are thinking, dear audience, about taking action, I know just the guy to talk to after this podcast as well. Lauri, thank you so much for this lovely conversation.
Thank you. Thank you, Florian.
To the audience as well. I hope you enjoyed it. And we're going to listen to you next time. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
And that's the end of yet another thought-provoking conversation about the art of digitalization. In the meantime, make sure to stay connected with eEstonia on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. You can also check out our website e-estonia.com to learn more about digitalization in this beautiful country and other upcoming events. For now, that is all from our side. Stay tuned for our next podcast episode and have a great day. The book.